Blog Talk Radio.
We're coming to you live from Take the Dress Off. How's everybody doing out there? We're still coming to you from two separate states, talking about a certain team known as
championships. Do you guys think we're going to predict them this year?
Gentlemen, the only question is not will they repeat, but how many times?
You know, I don't think we're talking about a repeat, a three-peat, or even a four-peat.
That's right. We're talking a minimum eight-peat.
What's going on, everybody? Late Night Sports Talk. Just me tonight. Kind of finished up on the part two of last episode. This episode, looking in the Bears draft, sort of review the players. Not going to review the two offensive linemen, though, because that's kind of boring. And everybody else, pretty well well-detailed analysis, and we'll continue the Bulls talk this episode, too. And if you want to call up, you can call us at 661-748-0240. And, yeah, I can call up and talk about anything at any time. Yeah, I guess sort of finishing up on the Bulls conversation, you heard Mike Dunleavy basically, you know, saying the same thing. Like, they're kind of shell-shocked. They don't know why they lost. Like, you know, things just didn't go their way. At least that's what Taj said, you know, which doesn't really make any sense. You know, all the players except for Powell basically said that they played all season really well, and they're not really well, but, you know, like, they did everything they could, basically, and just didn't work out for them, which, you know, like I just said last episode, doesn't make sense, because big picture, everything went your way. LeBron was cold for the first four games. Jimmy did a great job. Everybody was healthy. Cavaliers had Kyrie on one leg, no Kevin Love. I forgot about J.R. Smith. It's been in the first two games, and they just couldn't pull through. So, you know, I don't think this Garpax and Thibodeau combination can work out. I don't think they can coexist because they're just two different philosophies. And if you cut in the one idea for the other, you're kind of just, you know, sacrifice. It's like, you know, they're cutting nose off to spite your face type of thing. You kind of have to go one extreme or the other. It doesn't work this middle ground at all. Cause then it's just like, you know, Thibodeau isn't that guy. You need an offensive assistant. Otherwise it just isn't going to work out. But that was basically the summary of part one. And then going into the Bears draft, I guess actually first, before we get into that, we'll get into the whole Deflategate thing, because I almost feel obligated as a sports show to talk about that, even though, oh, no pun intended, but I think it's the most overinflated sports story there is. Basically, you know, Tom Brady deflated the balls, and now it's come out that that was the case, and he, you know, kind of pushed the, not the training staff, but who's ever in charge of that, and he kind of made that happen, and that was, you know, his doing, and he lied about it. That's what killed him, was when he lied about it. He should have just been upfront about it, but it doesn't make any difference, deflating the ball. Aaron Rodgers likes to overinflate the balls. Even Amani Toomer, he came out and said that underinflating actually makes it worse. I don't know why he wants to do that, because when you overinflate, like Aaron Rodgers likes to do it, you know, when this is true, it tightens your spiral, gives you more velocity, you can throw it further too. So, you know, deflating it only makes it worse. Honestly, I don't see what the big deal is. There's such a minuscule difference. And even with the difference, why even have the rule? Why not just let the quarterbacks inflate or deflate as much as they want? Like, it's not going to make – I mean, you're wearing, you know, like tacky glue receiver gloves, so why not, you know, slightly inflate or deflate the ball by, like, a couple ounces? Like, I don't see – I mean, Stick'em was banned, and that's, like, a true – you know, that's going to actually help you. I don't see why not just legalize all of it. You know, it doesn't make any sense. That and the whole, you know, finding thing – is insane, because, you know, you compare this to just Spygate. First off, that was just 2 second-round picks back-to-back years. This is 2 first-round picks back-to-back years. You know, Spygate's a totally different animal. If you know the defensive play call every single play, there's no way you're not going to win. Like, you'd have to be a horrible offense to not win. It's basically like running a play on a it's almost like running like the defense doesn't exist, because you know it's going to be open. You know it's going to be there. You just got to do it. Like, a college team could run that system if they knew the plays on defense every single time and still score. This isn't even close to comparison. This is like a minuscule inflating or deflating a ball. And, you know, like Roger said, he overinflates his ball, so it's not like he's the only one doing it. Doesn't make any – this is like on a scale from 1 to 100, Inflategate – or not Inflategate, but Spygate being 100, this is like a 2. But yet they're fined way worse. I think a lot of this, too, is kind of backfining for the – like if Spygate didn't happen, then Slategate wouldn't even be a story. But they're fined $1 million, and the Slategate was – I think it was like $500,000 for the Patriots, $250,000 for Bill Belichick directly, which the Patriots just covered anyway. So the fact that this is bigger than that, you know, it gets even worse because then you get into the other suspension times, like, you know, for smoking marijuana, Darrell Washington gets he's out the entire season, and then, you know, Tom Brady suspended four games from Inflategate, and then meanwhile you got Ray Rice, who, you know, is beating women, and he only gets suspended two games. So it's just, you know, typical, you know, I've been a Roger Goodell hater from the start. It just doesn't make any sense at all. Like, honestly, for Spygate, if they took away the Super Bowl, like, to me, that wouldn't have been too big of a deal. But for Inflategate, I think what they should have done, I mean, maybe, like, punish Tom Brady, you know, fine-wise. Like, okay, no big deal. Don't suspend him. That's just stupid. You're harming your own product for something stupid. And then just cancel the rule. Like, let the players inflate or deflate the ball as much as they want. It doesn't really make any difference. I mean, it does, but it's so minuscule. And why not just let the players do it? You're letting them do all this other stuff. It doesn't really make much sense to me. But, yeah, I guess that pretty much wraps that up. Just looking this over real quick. Matt, so basically, getting into the Chicago Bears draft. First round, they go for Kevin White, the receiver. Honestly, the closest comparison I can think of for him, and he plays a lot like Larry Fitzgerald, just like that extreme catch in traffic. But the thing I like about him is after the catch, he has that slippery effect and agility. It kind of reminds me of, like, Antonio Freeman in his prime. Like, after he makes a catch, if he could develop, like, a true stiff arm or get some strength like Terrell Owens, this guy's going to be a monster. Like, this guy's going to be the best yard-after-catch receiver since Jerry Rice. He kind of, after the catch, he kind of is a lot like Jerry Rice with that agility and slippery ability, kind of how, you know, back in the day or in the 90s, Jerry Rice and Antonio Freeman were the two best yak receivers in the NFL. But, reading my notes here, stiff arm power. Oh, I was just going to say, if we still had Brandon Marshall, oh, my God, this would be, like, the greatest receiver core, like, probably since, I would say, almost ever. But other than the 90s, when you had Chris Carter and Randy Moss and all those slot guys and the Terrell Owens, Jerry Rice era, other than that very two limited windows of time, this would be the greatest receiver core of all time. This would probably be the third greatest receiver core of all time had we hanged on to Brandon Marshall, which honestly to me didn't make any sense why you're getting rid of him. If he's still performing, he's not doing, I mean, it's like honestly with this whole, you know, like, oh, we should let go of this guy because he does this off the field or that off the field. Like that, I don't see why you should boycott or not let a player play because of that. I mean, if you don't like it, then talk to him personally or, you know, as a fan, you know, email him personally or boycott their jersey, but don't take him out of the whole game. Like, the game is just a game. Like, I don't, To me, it doesn't make any sense, like, to suspend these guys for, you know, this or that. Like, at the end of the day, their job is to play football. Like, if you hate them personally, then, you know, like, then start riots as a fan or boycott their jersey. And then, you know, like, because of that, financially, players won't want them or, you know, or don't go to the games or something like that. But to run, I mean, for all these petty little things, especially Brandon Marshall compared to other players, for all those petty things to let go of, in my opinion, probably the second best receiver in the NFL behind Calvin Johnson when he's healthy, in some ways the best, because, you know, it's for obviously the best go up and getter, you know, probably the strongest breaking tackle receiver in the NFL right now. You know, obviously not T.O. is not in the league, but even that receiver course. Because the other thing too is the Brandon Marshall effect. The only reason Alshon Jeffery turned out to be the receiver he was is because in training camp and all the time, he just kept emulating and learning so much from Brandon Marshall, and Brandon Marshall was teaching him stuff too and telling him stuff, and Alshon was asking him questions, and he was coaching him up. So for this Kevin White to come on here, if we still had Brandon Marshall, you know, for it to have two guys to learn from, and that's honestly how receivers work. Once you get a true core or true example, your receiver core is going to stay strong all the way through. I mean, look at Jerry Rice and all the guys he played with. All of his other receivers just turned out so great and were able to run routes so well just from being around that guy. When you're around Hall of Fame receivers like that, you just have the perfect example, you know, to emulate from, especially too in the NFL. You know, positional coaches, you can only learn so much. At the end of the day, you have to see it firsthand. You have to ask the guy firsthand, and that's what's going to truly make you great. Look at quarterbacks. That's just how it is. When you sit behind – you know, look at all the quarterbacks that came out from Hall of Famers, like Aaron Rodgers. You know, the list goes on forever. Aaron Rodgers, even Peyton Manning coming out from, I forget. Well, Peyton Manning didn't sit behind. He's kind of the exception because mentally he already had it down perfect. But Aaron Rodgers, even, you know, Jeff Garcia, not that big of a follow-up, but, you know, obviously Steve Young. Whenever you sit behind a true Hall of Famer like that and you see the perfect example and you kind of take what you can but modify it your own way and do the best you can with what you have, that's like the perfect formula. That's how you keep a continuing generation and pass on to the next generation of players and teams to keep that greatness at that level. Is you have to keep that core. So I think the letting go of Brandon Marshall is really going to kill Brandon or Kevin White's development. I still think he's going to be great. You know, I love him. You know, great hands. Just the way he can go up and get it, you know, in traffic is huge, especially in today's league and with the way, you know, Cutler plays. He's probably not – Cutler's not going to be here permanently, but just the way he plays is going to be huge with – I mean, just in general, like if you – oh, my gosh, I can't stop fantasizing about if we had Brandon Marshall, Alshon, and Kevin White because – You can just throw the ball up anywhere, and one of the three is going to go up and get it. It'd just be incredible. But yeah, moving on. Let's got Eddie Goldman. I think it was the second or third round. I don't know because I skipped the offensive lineman. In the he's a defensive tackle. You know, again, same as the guys we signed. It's the same Vic Fangio type of defense. The defensive tackle, big guys, perfect mentally. You know, perfect technique for stopping the run. Just reads the run perfectly, will shut you down. Like I said in the show, the Bears, honestly, I think I'm just going to say now the Bears are going to be the best run-stopping defense in the NFL, which is, you know, quite a bold prediction considering where they came from last year. But there's no reason not to. Like, it doesn't even matter about the linebacker core. And even still, you know, that Foster guy, I think it was his name, but the linebacker they signed, you know, he's a great run-stopper. But it doesn't even matter. With this defensive line, you're not going to get past the defensive line on the run. You're going to get stuffed at the line, which is even better than linebacker core. I'd take that over, you know, Ted Washington, Keith Brookings, you know, just big guy. I want a true guy who can, you know, get off of his block and move into position and stuff the run, which he's great at. But one of his flaws, he has inconsistent pass rush. That's kind of an athletic thing. But, you know, he just has the most, like, finely tuned textbook run-stopping technique there is. Like, that's just how you do it. Mentally, he knows what to do, but the thing – you know, he has some physical limitations, which hopefully, you know, that's obviously going to be more over-exaggerated in the NFL, where he can't, you know, from being a true superstar, he doesn't have that Reggie White type of takeover strength where, you know, because if he sees the play and sees what's coming, he always makes the right decision. But one of his problems, too, is he kind of lacks the a vision and he guesses plays wrong. But I think a lot of that can be covered up just by great team play. If you have guys calling run pass, you know, which gaps and everything, all that's totally covered up. And I'm, you know, pretty sure the way Vic Fangio runs his defense, that's not going to be an issue. But you saw it a lot in college, but I'm not too worried about that. See what else here. Holds ground well, you know, obviously textbook run stuffing. It, like, go back to the old show where we talked about the free agent signings. It's like all these guys are clones of each other. It's like they all come from the same family. They're just all brothers. It's like the big defensive tackle run stuffing, like, brother combination. It's just amazing how they're all such similar clones of each other. Vic Fangio just picks them all out. And, reads the offensive line well, but he can't – it's like he lacks vision behind the line that he can't see the play, like I was saying. Like, you know, he can read his block, and based on his block, he'll know what the play is, and he'll, you know, stuff the run. But then if he can see the vision and he sees the back coming, you know, he'll set up the lineman, you know, or set up the running back and make the lineman block a certain way and make the running back think he's got a hole and out of nowhere, you know, he'll just totally stuff the run and not give up any ground. And that's going to be huge on goal line situations, not giving up any ground. If we have like a fourth and goal and all these guys don't give up any ground, it's just going to create so many stops. Like, it's impossible. Like, in goal line situations, your defensive line is really all that matters, and giving up the ground is all that matters on run plays. That's all it's about. Like, not even getting past your block. As long as you don't give up an inch, your linebackers are going to make the play. I mean, unless you go to the extreme of really bad linebackers, that's just how it's going to turn out. Even with the Adrian Amos, he's another, you know, run-stuffing safety. So if you have Adrian Amos combined with the Foster linebacker combined with this guy, like, it's going to be impossible to score on this team on goal line and defensive situations. You're just going to get stuffed every time. You're going to have to pass. And, you know, obviously passing, you know, risk interceptions and everything else. I'll take the pass all day. But, I guess let me read over my notes real quick. Sorry, it's a one-man show, so bear with me. I think that's pretty much it. Yeah, won't allow the line to progress downfield. So he knows what to do. I think that's pretty much it. Oh, he's one of his other flaws athletically is he is, you know, it's kind of along with being big and strong. is he is slow to accelerate off a block. So, you know, once he gets off a block, if it's outside run, but if he's in the inside, it's not too big of a deal. But, you know, once he gets going, he has a tiny bit of speed. But, and that's a problem, too, with pass rushes. Once he gets off his block, he doesn't have, you know, the initial burst, which, you know, we're talking about the defensive tackles here. But that is a flaw. If he had that, if he had that and got a little bit stronger, he could be a superstar. But that's all he needs is those two things, and he'll be great. Because the you know, as I said before, the other issues will all be fixed with great team play. But yeah, moving on to now this is my favorite pick of the draft, even more than White is Jeremy Langford. This guy, like, this is the I sound like John Gruden there. This guy, when you got a guy like Johnny Football on your offense, I'll tell you what, we're running a 92-32 light banana. All right, but anyways, getting back to Jeremy Langford. This guy is just an incredible running back. Like, honestly, I was shocked seeing his highlights. Like, I don't want to get too overhyped, but like I'm not going to lie, when I first saw, like, oh my God, this guy's like the next Walter Payton Hall of Famer. It's over. Just the way this guy breaks tackles and to have his kind of combination, like, I can tell I'm excited right now. Both. I can't even contain myself right now. But no, like, just his ability. I'm like John Mann talking about Brett Favre. Yeah, just his ability to, I mean, he's just so hard to tackle. I love this guy. And he has so much agility, too. He just knows how to slip the tackle. He's kind of got he's got so much of everybody. He's got, like, the Jerome Bettis, like, you know, kind of does a little, you know, stutter fakes. He's not really trying to fake you out. He's just trying to get the right angle. So when you go for the tackle, there's kind of a brick wall when you go for a tackle. Like, he doesn't move. Like, if you need a true hit on him, like, it's going to be really hard to bring this guy down. This guy's going to be incredible. He has some, you know, his only flaw is he doesn't have the amazing top speed, but every Hall of Fame player doesn't have that. Like, or not every, but most all, like, you know, Walter Payton, Jerry Rice, they don't have amazing top speed. You don't need that. Like, you want the consistency of getting, you know, 4 yards, 5 yards every single play. You don't want to go for home runs because against good defenses, you're not going to get home runs. You can't rely on that. In the playoffs, you're going to fall apart. Look at, that's my one criticism of Barry Sanders all the time. Is he's, you know, he's a home run hitting running back. You know, he's great. He's the best at it. But that's why I would take a guy like Payton over him, is because Payton's going to get you that consistent 4 yards all the time. But someone like Barry Sanders, you know, he's just going to get stuffed at line too much. But with this guy, he just has an elite level of agility combined with his incredible tackle breaking ability, just the ability to make guys miss and shed blocks. He reads the defensive line and his blocks perfectly. He'll get the maximum. Other than an occasional dumb decisions, which is typical of a college guy, but he's so advanced. By that, I mean like 99 times out of 100, he's going to make the right decision, the right cut, and hit the right gap. I mean, he'll sometimes even make plays out of nothing where, like, you know, it's like the it's not as extreme or as good, but it's like the old school Barry Sanders where, you know, there's nothing there, and somehow he got, like, 5 yards by making everybody miss or, you know, pulling a miracle. But honestly, honestly, too, I'd say he's probably the best back out of the fourth round in NFL draft history ever. But, you know, I'm hyping this guy up like crazy. And as you know, late night sports talk, you know, me being pessimistic Punzo, there's usually never any hype. But I'm hyping up this Bears run-stuffing defense, and I'm hyping up this Jeremy Langford guy to the max. But honestly, if he just takes the next step and develops more of an initial pop and drive power in his legs, and a lot of that, too, is just lean because – his biggest flaw is he'll get caught standing up sometimes, you know, because he doesn't have a forward lean, that initial burst into the hole. You know, some of it is he's reading the line, but he needs to keep that forward lean because he has such an ability to, you know, take a hit and he's still standing like that, you know, Walter Payton, you know, esque, where he's not really that big. He's bigger than Walter, but, you know, where he's not that big, but you just hit him and it's like they just don't move. It's like it didn't even happen. Like, I mean, you know, talk to anybody who tried to tackle Walter before. It's like it physically doesn't make any sense. Like, you have, like, a 400-pound guy going full speed. He goes for a hit, and then it's like a video game where it's like you just ran into a brick wall and fell right down. Like nothing happened. Just that incredible core strength and stability. But if he gets going and gets the blocks he needs, I mean, he can make anybody miss. Like, he's as good or possibly better than anyone in the open field in the NFL right now, outside of probably Adrian Peterson. Like, this guy's kind of like – he's kind of like Matt Forte if you take away his top speed and give him perfect breaking tackle ability. Like as good as – not as good, but just a different style of Marshawn Lynch. Like, Lynch and the other guy – who was that? Lynch versus – who was in the Super Bowl? Oh, my gosh. Can't even remember right now. Let's see. Who was in the Super Bowl last year? I don't know. I predicted the Patriots – that Blunt guy. Like, Blunt and Lynch are just pure power, but this guy combines the agility with that so he can break the tackles rather than Lynch. He's not going to break a tackle by making guy come at the right angle. He's just going to, you know, stiff arm you to the ground all the time. This guy's more of a dynamic running back. He'll not only stiff arm you to the ground, but he'll get you at the right angle with those slight hesitation fakes like, you know, Jerome Bettis. So you can never take him head on. And that's, you know, that's the main thing as a running back, is just avoiding head-on contact, you know, like work done. He was more of a true power back, because that's honestly all it comes down to, is just, you know, like, you don't need true agility to make a guy miss. You just want to, if you can break tackles, all you need is just to not take him head-on and just, you know, read the defender and just slip by. And that's what this guy's incredible with, his ability to break tackles. But reading my notes here. Oh, occasionally he loses his footing, kind of like in a Amon Green effect, but it's not too frequent. You know, that's something that he can improve on. One thing I saw is I never saw him carry the ball in his left hand, so I'm kind of worried, too, he might be like an Amon Green where, you know, he only carries it with his right, and then he could easily fumble the ball, and, you know, eventually that'll be figured out like Amon Green was figured out. So I'm kind of worried about that, but that should be easily fixed as well. He needs more of a lower consistent lean, like I was saying. He gets caught standing up, you know, and that's how he'll lose momentum on contact. You know, that initial pop, you know, some of it is just, you know, strength, leg strength, glute strength especially, but a lot of it too is he just gets caught standing up. If he keeps that Peyton-like lean, because that's the main thing Walter Payton was great with, is that perfect lean all the time. If he maintains that lean and just takes the hit like that, because once he prepares himself, you know, he can drive a linebacker back into the end zone. This guy is just amazing. Like, I'm telling you, I'm so hyped about this guy. But it just, you know, a few things. I don't think the Bears have the coaching to teach that, but if he can figure it out on his own, or Pat Forte is probably a bad example for him. But if he can do the Forte, oh, my gosh. If he does the Forte speed drills and everything with him, and he figures out on his own, like, I know I'm hyping this guy up like crazy, but, hey, I was right about J.G. Watt, so, I mean, that wasn't a fair pick because, you know, I went to high school with him. But still, I mean, like, this guy's going to make the Hall of Fame if he puts that together, because, I mean, this is just – I've never seen this good of a fourth. Like, I don't know how he made it to the fourth round. Like, that's what I don't understand. I think a lot of it, too, is, you know, you got guys like Priest Holmes and the Chiefs where he's got great blocking and he doesn't do anything, and then it's like, oh, this guy's amazing, and, you know, or certain guys in the college who get drafted high when all he did was run behind great blocking. And then you got guys like this where he doesn't have great blocking. He's just an incredible back. I mean, he probably doesn't have the hands and stuff of, you know, a current day back, but you don't need it, especially too with Matt Forte. You know, they probably were looking for a power guy, but forget power if you can break the tackle. Like, power and agility don't matter if you can break the tackle. That's like, for me in my system, that's always the perfect system, is just to have a tackle-breaking running back. That's honestly the true test of greatness, is how well do you break tackles at the end of the day, because everything else defensively can be figured out. But I guess moving on to Adrian Amos, he was the safety. I don't know what round he was drafting him, but he was the last pick who wasn't an offensive lineman. He's just a really powerful, big, like Mike Brown, like hitting safety. Like, he's not he's not that big, but just his ability to hit and that tackling form, that's the most comparable guy is Mike Brown. Another thing, too, that I really liked about him is when he goes for interceptions, he always gets it at the apex of his jump. He's got that timing down perfect, which that'll be huge if he can knock down passes against players like Megatron, especially with the potential loss, I haven't kept up on that, of Charles Tillman. We need guys who can stop that, especially since that's what the NFL is turning into, is just, you know, the basketball-type player since contact. And that's my biggest worry about this guy. Or I was going to say, since contact is, you know, illegal now, now you just go for, you know, basketball players to go up, like, you know, basically a Kevin Durant is what you want, because you can't hit him, because that, you know, used to be the flaw. You get a guy like that, they'll die immediately because they just get killed all the time. But now you can't kill him. So I don't know how that's going to transfer over. I'm kind of worried about that. Probably get a lot of calls on him because he's just an old school, like, 90s safety, run stuffing safety. But, I mean, that's a lot of his game, too. Although he is great at knocking down passes. He's really smart with his decision-making. Doesn't always go for the interception like some players and get killed. He'll bat it down when he needs to. He's pretty smart. He's amazing at stuffing the run for safety. He does it conservatively, too. He doesn't gamble like Troy Polamalu. He'll read the run, and he'll make the run, and he'll tackle him as close to the line of scrimmage as possible while still, you know, having that safety mindset of being the last man back. Perfect pursuit angles. That's probably my favorite thing about him, is perfect pursuit angles. And also, like Mike Brown, he's a major threat after the interception. He'll also make guys miss. He reads blocks well. He'll, you know, cut through their side of the field if he has to. He's just a very smart, consistent, proper form safety with run pursuit. He's just, you know, another Vic Fangio type guy. So, yeah, I guess that pretty much sums up him. Looking over my notes again real quick. Before when Darren was on, every time I look over my notes there, I'd like always look him over when he was going in a rant. But now it's like, hey, gotta like randomly stop in the middle of nowhere to read this. But yeah, you got that. Well, and there's no breaks there. But yeah, that, and then I guess just some random thoughts. I might as well not even share them. It kind of ruined the flow of the show. But that's pretty much it. So if you want to tune out now, that'd be a good time, because now that's the summary of the Chicago Bears drafts. Just some few random things. You know, I was thinking this is pretty much just filling air. The Cubs, honestly, I was thinking the Cubs honestly are bigger than baseball in the MLB. Now, I know it sounds crazy, but if you think about it, if the Cubs went to the World Series, like, that would be bigger than the MLB itself. Like, that would probably draw in more people than the MLB could draw in if it were to ever happen. But, you know, Cubs are looking pretty good. Probably make the wild card this year. But next couple of years, that'll be pretty interesting. But, yeah, I guess I didn't really cover national NBA. Not really much to predict here. I don't think with the way LeBron's playing, I think they'll be able to get past the Hawks, because they're really not that great of a team. I mean, as a whole, they're great, but there's no true superstars on that team. Like, there's no one who can take over. You know, once they're out, once you match their level of coaching, then they're pretty much disabled, because that's the only way they're going to win, because it's just, you know, the Popovich clone, you know, with their former assistant trying to run his offense and his scheme, but they don't have the talent to really push through that way, and that, you know, the other teams have. I mean, if Kyle Korver's looking how he is, and Kyle Korver isn't that great of a player, that just goes to show that this is just all coaching and getting guys open and everything. But on the west side with the Warriors and the Rockets, I mean, that is definitely going to be the matchup of the that's going to be the best round in the entire playoffs, even more than the finals, is this Warriors-Rockets matchup. I was shocked, you know, that they came back. It seemed like Harden didn't really seem to do too much, but at least he kind of got out of his typical playoff slump. We'll have to see how he does later on. I think if he goes up against LeBron, he might step it up again, because he did in the regular season, kind of like a, you know, who's a true MVP, me or you, who's a true best player right now. So if he can bring that competitive level and kind of, you know, hope LeBron chokes, which, you know, he did in game six. Finally, LeBron put it together. By the way, you know, being a longtime LeBron James hater, it seems like he finally figured it out. I mean, I haven't seen him hit a clutch shot in the playoffs in forever, since the Cavaliers. Like, honestly, when I saw that game, I was like, what is this, a bad dream? Is this even real life? LeBron just hit the clutch shot buzzer beater. Like this doesn't happen. Like, that was, you know, the perfect defended play. You got Jimmy Butler right on him, low percentage shot, perfectly contested. You know, that was as good as you could do right there. But yeah, it's gonna be interesting for sure. I think the biggest problem with the Warriors in stopping the Rockets is gonna be Dwight Howard inside. If Dwight can take over, you know, well, Dwight's not really a playoff takeover guy, but, you know, if he can get in a rhythm. And if he can get going there, I don't see how they're going to stop it. And defensively, I don't know how the Rockets are defensively, but I think they'll be able to kind of keep up with them. It's just going to be, you know, obviously a shootout, but it'll be interesting. I honestly don't really have any predictions left for the NBA. It's kind of just, I'm just being a fan right now, going to sit and watch for sure. I could see the Rockets going in, but I don't know. It'll be interesting. I was surprised the Wizards lost to the Hawks there, but, you know, Paul Pierce, that was incredible. Three buzzer beaters. Because, you know, obviously that third one should have gone in, but, I mean, that was amazing. Paul Pierce, that's what I mean. That's what you want is veterans in the playoffs. That's what'll take you the furthest. But, I mean, that was just amazing. He was a true clutch performer, best performer of the playoffs so far. I mean, you know, he got robbed the last one, but still, that was, I mean, this NBA playoffs have been amazing in general with the three buzzer beaters back to back to back. That was amazing. But, yeah, I think that's pretty much it. Hold on, one more thing. Oh, yeah, the Blackhawks. Hey, technically the Blackhawks win. That's seven titles in 5.5 years or 6 years now. But we'll have to see. We just pick the Blackhawks every year being fans, obviously. So it's, like, not a true pick. But I'm not really the hockey expert. That's mostly Darren, who's not in tonight. But, yeah, that's pretty much it. Last thought was, you know, I was thinking they should start a God, this blog technically is killing me. She just interrupts all the time, which you guys can't even hear. But, yeah, if they just have like you know how steroids are banned with the MLB and stuff? I was thinking, why don't they just start a steroid league? Because everyone would rather watch that. I mean, it's like we had, you know, like it was mentioned before, if you have two sets of Olympics, you have like the drug-tested, truly excruciating-tested league, you know, Olympics. Then you have, like, the roided out edition. You know, what's everybody going to watch? Obviously, everyone's going to watch the roided out edition. It's so much better. Same with sports, too. If you had, I mean, it's kind of how it is now, you know, under the, I don't know what the term is, like, under the table right now. But if you had a true, like, openly roided up league in football and, you know, and not really basketball, but just in general, and especially if you brought back the big hits, too. You know, I've said that before. If you just had a league right now, like, if you regenerated the XFL with old-school rules and that type of play style, and you were open to steroids on top of it, too, yet, you know, just, like, any steroids you want, like, no limits, no drug limits. You know, get all these weight-beating guys and all these, you know, like, the player who smoked marijuana was out for the whole year, which is the craziest suspension ever. Just bring all those guys in. Bring the Brandon Marshalls. Just bring everybody everyone doesn't want. Bring the TOs. You can't make a team. I mean, there's a huge market for that right now. Somebody has to capitalize on that big time, but it seems like no one, you know, everyone who failed against the NFL with Vince McMahon and Donald Trump are just all too scared. But now's the prime time for that, especially with the lack of hits. And, I mean, everyone's going to watch that. You know, not even steroids alone, just the big hits. If someone brought back the big hits and brought in those players, it's just going to win out without a doubt. I mean, you're going to have trouble. The biggest thing is, you know, sponsors initially, but as long as the fans are there, that's all that matters. You're going to get some kind of sponsors. That's the other thing, too, is the NFL is really nitpicky for who they take for Super Bowl ads. Free up the ads. So free up the ads. Free up the player restrictions, free up the drug restrictions, and free up, you know, well, yeah, player restrictions go along with, like, the retired players. And it's and then just do the same system as Donald Trump, where you just take the rookies in college and just, you know, pay them more, and then they'll come over. It's really simple, but I'm just shocked somebody's done that. But, yeah, I guess it's pretty much wrapping it up for today. I'm shocked I filled up two shows all on my own. That's pretty amazing. But, yeah, I'm just going to look this over real quick. I think that's pretty much it. Yeah, I'll see you guys some other time.